You're listening to the Midlife with Courage podcast. This is where women in midlife come for inspiration, motivation, and sometimes a little education to help them flourish after 40. Don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button so that I can keep bringing you wonderful guests just like the one we're having today. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Midlife with Courage. I am Kim Benoit, your host, and today I have a lovely guest with me. Her name is Leslie Ellis. Welcome to the podcast, Leslie.
Thank you so much, Kim. I'm really excited to be here.
Yes, I'm excited to talk to you as well. So why don't you just start first? Just tell us a little bit about you. Where in the world are you? What are you doing?
Great. I live right in the center of the state of Oregon on the west coast of the US. I'm right in the middle of the state in Bend in the high desert. I live here with my partner and my two dogs. I'm definitely a dog person, not
Yay.
so much a person, mostly because I'm allergic, but yeah. And I have been self-employed for a long time as a yoga therapist and coach, and that's how I spend my time.
Wonderful. So let's just start. Let's jump in. And I love that you're a dog person before we jump in. You know, I have two dogs as well. So yeah, you're my people. There's nothing like a dog. Tell us about a time in your life when you felt courageous or you showed courage.
Yeah, thanks. That's one of the questions that I love that you ask, because I feel like, you know, as women, sometimes we can get caught up in all of the things that we have to do for other people. And it's so nice to step back and be like, oh, yeah, I do have a lot of courage. Like, my heart is a courageous, forceful horse, for lack of a better word. You know, there's many times, I think, but the one that's coming to my mind right now was quite a long time ago. I think in my like late 30s or so. I'm 61 now, so about 30
Oh my
years
gosh.
ago. And I was feeling really kind of stressed and burned out with my work. And it was like another time that I was feeling like that. And something had happened at work where I was just like, I am not doing this anymore. This is not what I'm meant to be doing. Like, this is sucking the life out of me. My soul is like shriveling up. And I went home from work and I called my boss. I called her like at 6 o'clock at night. And I said, I quit. I'm not doing this anymore. And of course, that was a shock to her. She didn't know that that was coming, but I actually did it. Like, they tried to talk me out of it the next day with like promises of changes and meetings and all of this. And I was like, no, I'm done.
You're done.
I'm done. And I felt so like steady in that. Also tremoring inside, because what the heck am I going to do now? Right. But yeah, that sense of courage of like really taking a stand for myself stands out for me of like a turning point in life where, okay, I can really make a difference for myself and do what I want to do.
That's amazing. It's so funny, the women that I talk to in the podcast, some of them do what you did and just, I'm done. That's it. And others are like, well, I have to have a plan first before I'm done. But I love both ways. But I love that. How did you feel like the next day you said they were coming at you? How did you feel that day? You said you had a little bit of like, oh my gosh, what have I done? But you felt so right, right?
Well, you know, I got called into my boss's office, and I worked on a geriatric psychiatry unit. I actually worked in mental health for many years, and she called in the head nurse and me, and we were going to have a little conversation and kind of try to calm me down, right? That was the feeling of it. Like, all right, they're going to try and calm you down, because I am going to be a little fiery and a little passionate. And
Sure.
I was always the one there that was like trying to make changes and trying to get everybody on board to like do better. And no, I just remember this feeling of like, no, I'm done. Like, I listened and I heard what they said, and I was like, oh, that sounds great. That's really good. But no, I'm not part of it. I'm not part of it. And when you were talking too, I was just thinking, like, even for those of us who might need to make a plan, because there's certainly been times when I make a plan, there is a point where it's like, I'm done. with this. And it's okay if what follows that is not like quitting and abandoning the whole thing, right?
Right.
It's okay if what comes from that is making the plan, but it's that point of like, no, I'm done. And I think owning that and allowing ourselves to sit with it so we can't be talked out of it. Maybe we can be informed differently. Maybe we can get more information. Maybe we won't even decide like, I'm done means I'm not doing this thing anymore. But it's that point where I can change this to make it fit me. I can change this to make it suit me. And if the forces around me aren't willing to change with me, then maybe it's time to get out of there.
Yeah, good point. Another thing that you said that stuck out to me was your boss had no idea that you were getting to that point. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Especially because it's not the first time I've been in her office complaining, right? Air quotes,
Yes,
complaining
complaining.
about what was going on or suggesting different, things that we could do differently or sharing observations of some of, what I felt were, in healthcare, in a lot of business places, but in healthcare, a lot of the staff are stressed out. And stress doesn't always lead to our very best presentation of ourselves. And
Right.
I think that I was in a position to, help try to get people to recognize that in themselves. But it was a hard road a lot of times because there wasn't the support. And so even though we'd had all those conversations, no, I don't think she knew it at all. And I really did think she was like, oh, Leslie's just, upset. I mean, something pretty significant happened in that moment that I was like, no, this isn't okay. We can calm her down. We can settle her down. She's not going to, what's she going to do, right? She's not going to
Oh, yes, she is.
quit. Oh, yes, she is. I
Oh,
gave him a month's notice.
you did. Okay. I was going to say, like, it wasn't like you were done the next day. I'm sure you had to give a little bit of time.
Well, I was a professional, an occupational therapist, or I was practicing occupational therapy at the time. So, yeah, 30 days notice. But I'm sure in those 30 days there were some wavering, It was, and my husband was like, you are doing what? Although he was really supportive and it all worked out. But I felt pretty steady those whole
That's
30 days.
awesome.
Did my job and I was on my way up.
And you're done. Yeah, I love that when we make those big decisions like that and we just feel them. Like, don't you just feel it in your body that this is what I'm supposed to do? This is what's right for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say, like in the 30 years since then, I feel more in my body because I'm much more connected to it. Because I think a lot of times we try to bypass, like you can feel that in your body, but then it's so easy to jump out of it and like try to figure it out in your head about it, figure it out. What am I going to do now? And what I found is like going back to my body over and over and over again is part of what helps to anchor and steady me. It probably was helpful that when I made that decision, I had been teaching yoga. I started teaching yoga as kind of a sideline to my full-time job. And I was teaching six yoga classes a week and working full-time and like driving all over everywhere to teach these yoga classes. I had yoga props in the back of my car. And so I had this like mind-body practice that was supporting me. And although there's no way I could support myself financially, teaching six yoga classes at 24-hour fitness in the local community center, I also had something else that I could sort of put my faith in of, well, I'll make something else work, something that feels better to me. Yeah.
So tell us what you did do. What did you decide to do after that 30 days was over? I know you decided before then, but what were you thinking and what are you doing?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I was teaching yoga. And so I just put my whole self into that and started teaching some additional classes, got associated with a yoga studio. that I loved that I was practicing at. And then actually it opened up space for me too, because I could start to explore, okay, well, if I'm going to teach yoga and I'm going to make this be the thing that I do for my work, what else do I need? Like I said, I was an occupational therapist. I was very drawn to yoga therapy, and I had the great benefit of knowing this woman who was opening a studio who was doing yoga therapy. And so I had space and time to like mentor with her, spend time with her, help her out at the studio, kind of learn the business in a way. And I never would have had that if I was still working my full-time job. And looking back, it was a dream. Like I did want to move out of healthcare and into yoga, but I couldn't really see how to make that work because I was afraid. I was afraid that, like, well, how are you going to make money teaching yoga? And it's still a question some days, but I have figured it out. I've been self-employed as a yoga teacher, yoga therapist, and coach for over 25 years now. So
Nice. Well, so you
it'll work.
figured it out.
I figured it out. But yeah, it just, like I said, making that decision and taking that stand for myself, it opened up space for me to be able to feel into, okay, now what do I really want? Because I think sometimes when we're stuck in the routine and the day-to-day, and this is what I do, and these are the roles that I play, and this is how I present myself and what I think about myself, it doesn't allow for kind of that creative spark in us to get ignited. And making that shift, like that dramatic, like I'm done, that was an ignition point. You know, if I'm done with that, well, you know, I'm not even 40 years old, now what? And so then that kind of flame of what does suit me, what does fit for me, was able to start burning. And then that just continued because I taught yoga at someone else's studio for a while, and then I opened my own yoga studio, and I ran that for a long time and was able to gather community that I loved being around. Like I said, our healthcare unit, my coworkers, many of them are very lovely, but sometimes they were challenging to work with. I got to choose my own coworkers, and I got to choose my community, and that doesn't only happen like in our workplace, right? It can happen outside of that too. But I think that piece for me of like gathering around me the people who I resonated more with, that I felt more home with, that made all the difference than for me to like keep on going, even when it was challenging. Because I can see being self-employed is not the easiest thing. It's not like an easy choice.
No, it's not the easy choice,
Not an easy choice.
but it's very rewarding. I love how you were talking about how when you made that decision, if you were done and then other things come in and you open yourself to the new things that you can do. And that's kind of similar. Just recently, I did a podcast a few weeks ago about how I had to clear out some clutter in my house.
Yeah, I saw that one.
And as soon as I did that, I had been working on some things or trying to work on some things for my business. And as soon as I did that physical decluttering stuff, all these like ideas kept coming in. And here I am, and I've got these plans going now. It kind of reminded me of that. Once you realize what you need to stop doing and you do it, take that action, then all these things come to you, your new community, everything that you're meant to do. So I love that.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's what I was trying to say. Like when we're kind of stuck in those routines, there's like no space for anything new to come in. Like, you know, if every surface in your house is covered with knickknacks, there's no place for like that beautiful, you know, statue that anchors your heart.
I love that you said it was an ignition point too, and it started this fire. I love that imagery. That's amazing and beautiful. So in all of this that you had going on, we have talked about before we started recording about the myth of mind over matter. Let's talk about that. How does that all fit into this, and what is that? Because it's really, to me, that's something I'm like, that's a myth. What's going on there?
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ladies, I am so excited about my new venture in this podcast. I'm calling it Midlife with Courage Unfiltered. You are going to get me, Kim Benoit, once or twice a month. I'm going to be getting real with you about the conversations that I have with my guests, and I'm going a little bit deeper. I'm going to bring my own personal experiences into it. I'm going to share what I've got going on in the hopes that you will share right back with me. This is not going to be me just talking in front of the microphone. I want your input. I want your participation. If you go to my show notes at the end of this episode, you'll see a support the show. That is where you can subscribe to Midlife with Courage Unfiltered. For only $5 a month, you're going to get this extra bonus content once, twice a month, and we're going to talk about what's really happening in midlife. I'm going to share my experiences. I'm going to get real. I'll probably get a little vulnerable. I'll be sharing things I don't normally share. So please subscribe so that you can get in on the founding members of this new Midlife with Courage Unfiltered. I'll see you there.
Yeah, great. I love that because I like the mystery. And that's something that I feel like a lot of us, we don't also have time for. We're like in the mundane, in the responsibilities, in the this is what we need to do. And we don't have time to open ourselves up to the possibilities, the mystery, the unknown, the like what might happen if I am just present here. But the myth of mind over matter has kind of evolved for me over time. And, I am a yoga teacher. I am a yogini. And that connection to my body is very, very strong through that. Now, I will say, because I just can't help but say it, that not everybody who practices yoga is really connected to their body or really embodied. There's a lot of pushing and striving, and like, yes, you could do a lot of things with your body, but what I'm talking about is actually being in your body. And this is what I think of as like that myth of mind over matter. I've been in spiritual circles for a long, long time. Like I said, I've been teaching yoga for over 25 years, and I've been practicing a lot longer than that. In spiritual communities and in personal growth, also, I think a lot of times we're really encouraged to shift our mindset and to become more mindful. And those are amazing things to do. I'm not dissing that at all. We absolutely need to have a positive mindset. We need to be really aware of what our thoughts are and our perspectives, our beliefs, our limiting beliefs, all of those things. Mindfulness, of course, encourages us to be present, to be aware of what it is we're thinking and how we're thinking, what we're feeling, emotionally. And to shift, to make shifts in that, to change our focus, to put our attention in different direction that would serve us better. So these are all very, very positive. But I feel like there's also this kind of undercurrent of that somehow when we do that, when we're like doing better in our minds, we can transcend, and this is a spiritual term, right? To like transcend the human experience somehow, that we can get away from all of the like gunk of life that somehow is going to help us to just like everything's going to be bright and shiny. Now all's good. We could be in a bliss state floating along, and all good will come to me from the universe if I just believe that that will happen and I don't let any of my negative thoughts come in and like interfere. And that's beautiful, right? But the thing is that life does still happen. And what happens is that even like no matter how good our thoughts are and how good we try to be in the way that we're thinking about things, people, will often find like, oh, but the same kinds of things keep happening. The same kinds of people keep showing up in my lives. I keep getting into the same kind of relationships. I'm like working so hard on myself, but I just keep falling into these old traps or these old habits. And I feel like what's missing in all of that are our bodies. when we think about our bodies, when we think about our bodies, right? We think about what we want to do for our bodies to make our bodies healthier and more fit and slimmer. So often, like that's the thing, right? Like, if I just could lose some weight, I mean, I would feel better. I would think better if all of that. So for me, it's more about creating a real relationship with your body. And whenever you're doing any kind of mindset or mindfulness practice, do not forget your body. So one practice that a lot of people might have been exposed to or encouraged to do, like affirmations. So it kind of changes the way that you're thinking about yourself and your situation, right? And we all know that an affirmation is more impactful, helpful if we do it in the present tense, not in the future, right? So when we do an affirmation, we say, I am, or I feel, or I believe, whatever it is that the affirmation is about, it's like that way I'm doing it now. And I state that affirmation as if it is already happening. Well, one of the benefits of that, and you may have heard this before, listeners may have heard this before, but your nervous system can't really discern whether something is just a thought or whether it's a like reality, whether it's a manifest reality, right? So this is why affirmations are so powerful. But you can tenfold that if you also feel your feet on the ground and sit a little deeper in your chair. And take a few breaths and start to shift your nervous system into that more parasympathetic response, which is the rest and digest, rest and relax system, instead of where we most of us are in a sympathetic nervous system, like, woo-woo, what else do I have to do? Right? How can I get my thoughts? How can I get myself to be better? Right? Go into your body and then say those affirmations. So this is one simple example that comes to me. But what I feel like is when you're in your body, when you actually have a relationship with your body, when mindfulness leads you to like the sensations and what you're feeling as you're doing what you're doing, that then no longer do we need to transcend this human experience. What we do is amplify the human experience. And in amplifying that human experience in this way, we also feel more alive and feel more energetic, feel more excited about what it is that we're doing. Because it's no longer we're just trying to think our way through. We're actually there doing what we're doing.
Yeah, I totally see that connection there. And trying to connect it with someone who maybe isn't comfortable in their body. Because a lot of us, we're going through this time where we get all this extra belly fat and things going on that we don't like, skin's changing, all that kind of stuff. Does that have any effect on it?
Well, I think there's all kinds of reasons that people don't feel comfortable in their bodies, right? The things that you're talking about, the changes that happen in midlife, all of that. Certainly experience that too. Like I could look in the mirror and say, oh my gosh, where'd all those wrinkles come from? I feel sometimes younger than I look if I look in the mirror. But I also have, done a lot of this personal work to not get too caught up in it. But I'm not discounting that there is a point where we might be caught up in that. Society and culture and all of that really has a play in that because of the ideals that we have about our bodies and all of that. But the other thing is sometimes people have had trauma in their body, and that could be trauma from injuries, it could be sexual trauma, it could be childhood trauma, all of those things. So there are lots of reasons why people don't feel comfortable in their bodies. So what I say is, I say it like this, like being present in your body, but we can widen it out so that it's not like you have to like go in and feel every single thing in your body and think about that extra belly fat and how, what you don't like about it and all of that. I'm really talking more about just paying attention to the sensations in your body and And that sense of like grounding yourself and being more present in that way. But I also will often talk, especially when somebody is like, no, it's not for me. Like to be in my body is not for me. I don't like my body. It doesn't feel good. It hurts. Like there's, again, all of these different things. Then to start with creating a relationship with your body. So if it's really hard to be in your body, what if you could be with your body? Like a friend. Like you don't have a friend that you're like, eh, too many wrinkles there. I'm not hanging out with her anymore.
That's
Right?
true, yeah.
Well, too fat for me. I'm not even going to be seen in her presence.
You wouldn't have many friends if you felt like
Don't do that.
that.
Exactly. Yeah, because we all have wrinkles and we all have fat. Not everyone, but most people, and I've found like even women who are very slim, they have the things that they don't like about their bodies. And we have the things that we don't like about our friends, but we don't abandon our friends because of that. Right? We open ourselves up to like, okay, there's all different ways of presenting in the world. And maybe there are some friends that we do decide, like, okay, that's not really the person for me anymore. But it's not usually because she's too fat or because she has wrinkles or because she has hot flashes or, you know, all the other things in our bodies that we experience that make us abandon ourselves.
So much of this abandoning ourselves, I feel like as midlife women, that's who's listening, we do kind of abandon ourselves over time because of everything, like we said earlier, that you're serving everyone else, you're doing all these other things, and then now it's time to come back to you and pay attention. And I love this, not just, now I get it, the myth of mind over matter. Like that totally makes sense to me now. So
I love it.
yeah, so I'm hoping the midlife women who are listening are getting that too. I'm sure they are. If I can get it, they can get it. So my brain fog is just strong today. This is terrible.
Can I say something about that?
Yes, please.
It's another thing that I've thought about, and it is kind of in this myth of mind over matter too, because in midlife, most of us experience things like brain fog. We have a hard time concentrating sometimes. Like this happens for me. Sometimes I'm just like, you know, multitasking used to be a skill that I have. Now sometimes it just feels like a little bit of a like interrupter, you know. Lack of focus, like a hard time of staying focused on one thing can be difficulty, distractibility, all of those, right? And we construe those as being negative. It's like, oh, brain fog. Like, I can't get my thoughts together. I can't. Oh, I forgot again. Oh my gosh, am I getting Alzheimer's? I walked in the kitchen and I was going to get something, but now I have to like trace myself all the way back to the bathroom where I was to try to figure out what it was that I wanted in the
Oh my
kitchen.
gosh.
Okay.
It's like
So,
you're in my house.
well, I'm in my body, which has a lot of similarities with you. But here's what I want to offer is that what if we looked at even these changes that were happening, not as like something that's getting in our way from doing all the things that we need to do and taking care of the way that we want to, but looked at them as kind of doorways into new ways of being in this time of life. Because when you can't think exactly like you used to think, when you don't remember everything that you were going to do, when you're distracted, it's actually the perfect opportunity to kind of lean back and go, well, then what else is there?
Oh.
What else is there? Like, if I can't think in the moment of what I was going to say, what am I going to say now?
I love that. That gave me goosebumps.
Ah, good. Like it's a time for us to move into new places in our life. This is not the end of our lives, right? A lot of that stuff that we've been responsible for is falling away. And that can be a reason for grieving and challenging. thing in our lives, but it's also like new possibilities are opening up. And there's all kinds of stuff like in the periphery and beyond that we can't see yet. This is waiting for us to like glance that direction. But when we're so stuck in like, this is how I wish things were, this is how I want things to be, this is how it has always been for me, why isn't it like that anymore? Then our attention, we're like, we have tunnel vision, right? And midlife and beyond that, you know, I have many clients who are in their 70s who are waking up to new possibilities in themselves. And I just was with somebody yesterday, and her mother died recently. Her cousin died, and then a friend's husband died. There was all this, she's grieving. Like, there's this whole thing, but she also said, it was so powerful. It gave me goosebumps because her kids are grown and married, all of that. She's like, there's so much more space for me now. Because her mother was in a assisted living, and you know, she was managing her whole life. And so when we hold on to those kind of old roles and scripts in the way that we've been, again, there's not the space that we need in order to kind of wake up to something different and something new. What's ready for you now?
That's such a great way to think about it. Yeah, not what you don't have, it's what you can now get or what you can find and do and be. And yeah, that's beautiful. It's wonderful.
We can go back to your decluttering thing, right? Like if you just want all that stuff, then there's no room for something new to enter your life.
Oh, I love that. So you mentioned you have clients, and we had said earlier that you're a coach. So you're a soul embodiment coach, right? Tell us about that. What does that mean?
So I have a, well, I'm a yoga teacher, yoga therapist, and I have a certification in a process called soul-based coaching, which is a beautiful process. And you were talking earlier about some of the metaphors. Like, I love metaphors. I love telling stories, and I love metaphors, and I love imagery and all of that. And there is a way in which our souls, like that deepest essence of the self and the who we are underneath all of this other stuff, speaks in imagery and speaks in metaphor. So soul-based coaching helps connect us into that, like this inner landscape that can show us the way to make changes that we don't read in books necessarily, or that, you know, teachers don't say, well, do this, or a lot of life coaches like help you make lists, you know, of the things that you should do and action plans and all of that. So as a soul embodiment coach, I'm not so interested in what your action plan is, although it can certainly help you determine like what your next step is, right? I'm more interested in like what you know about yourself and about what you want. So it's also, it's a very desire-based process versus a problem-based process. We're not looking at like, well, I have this problem I need to fix. I'm a problem that I need to fix, right? What do I want? And what's my way there? Soul embodiment for me is really what we've been talking about, being more present with the body, having a relationship with the body that allows us not to abandon ourselves, not to go off somewhere else seeking what we might want or what we might find or what somebody else thinks is the way to go, but to really connect in to our own center and to explore that from there. As a teacher, I've always used visualization and imagery as part of the teaching process. And we can do yoga. So I do yoga postures and things like that with people, movement. Because when we're moving our bodies and we're inhabiting our bodies, another level of information becomes available to us. Intuition doesn't all happen in your mind. Intuition isn't about what you think about something, right? It really is like what you know. And your body has so much wisdom to impart, to give to you, to help you, to help guide you, like in the direction that is going to serve you most. Your body is a place where you can connect with, the kind of link up the pieces so that you know more about the meaning in your life, your own purpose, what it is that you're here to do. You can't think your way there. I really believe that.
Yeah, that is so powerful. I love that it's we don't have to go looking to the outside world. It's here, like to focus in on here. And this is the perfect time for women in midlife to do that. Like we've said multiple times, but I love that. So, do you mostly work with women when you're coaching?
Yeah, it seems like the people who are drawn most to working with me are midlife aged women, so women over 40. Like I said, I have several clients who are in their 70s, so that whole span, because there are shifts that we're navigating, through all of those years. The shifts are different at 40 than they are at 70. Still, like transitions in life and looking at ourselves and that personal growth. I always remember though, it's hard for me to say, like, well, I work with women because I have those few soulful men who have always hung out with me in my circles. And so not opposed to working with men at all, and have had some beautiful, beautiful client sessions with men as well. But yeah, the women tend to come, and I do run circles and things like that. So that's kind of a nice space because, as women, we're those hearts that tend to others, and community can really makes a difference. So gathering together in circle. Most of my circles are virtual, so I don't work.
That was going to be my next question.
I do in-person work. I run some retreats, and I'll do in-person workshops sometimes, but because I wanted, so this is another thing, and I like everybody, because I wanted more location independence. I don't want to be just stuck in one place. And I do travel a lot, but I spent the whole first 6 months of this year traveling and working from the road from my camper.
Oh,
And
fun.
So because I wanted that, I work virtually. And it's also opened up for me, then my community is international. No longer,
Oh,
I don't
sure.
here in Bend, I get to work with people all over the world, so that's very exciting.
Isn't that amazing? Like we probably wouldn't have even thought of that. Like, well, I don't know how many years ago, but as a kid, like I would never thought I'd be talking to women all over the world with this podcast. It's amazing technology. So you do yoga therapy too, and I know you said you incorporate that into the coaching. Do you do that kind of a separate thing too? Is that kind of aligned with your occupational therapy background or?
Not as Well, I mean, my occupational therapy background definitely informs that because of my studies in philosophy and kinesiology and physiology and all of that. As a yoga therapist, I feel like there's much more of that kind of whole body, whole self aspect that comes in, or that framework. And I do yoga therapy. So if somebody, say, has a shoulder that is painful and not feeling the way that they want, or they have low back pain, or a lot of times women, and women in midlife, of course, have pelvic floor issues and hip and low back issues. So I can work with someone very specifically around that, with exercises and training and techniques that help to support physical health. But I'm always going to bring the spiritual in, because it is part of who we are too. We're not just a body either. Like, we're a whole system. So all of that plays in. So I would say even those sessions become soul embodiment, because we really look at, like, what is it that you want? What is it that is important to you? And so I don't go from, like, well, if you have stress incontinence, well, then we do this, 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 and this. Right? There's so many
Parts
things
to it.
into that.
I love that. I love that. I love that. That's what healthcare should be.
That's why I'm not there anymore.
I know. I noticed that in the stuff I was reading that I think we're aligned there very much. That's so one of the reasons I'm not anymore either. So yeah, we'll save that for a whole other day. So Leslie, where would people find you if they'd like to learn more about what you offer?
I have a website.
Okay.
It's yogaheartsong.com.
Okay.
The name of my business is Heart Song Yoga Wellness and Coaching. But Heart Song Yoga was taken when I got my URL 30 years ago or 25 years ago. So it's Yoga Heart Song. I'm also really active on social media, on Facebook. I don't keep up with my Instagram as much, but they can find me on Facebook. Probably if you search Leslie Ellis Heart Song or Leslie Ellis Bend, Oregon, you could find me because the URL is, I don't know, something other than just my name.
Okay. We'll find you wherever you are. That's awesome. So yeah, we'll put that link in the show notes to your website and then people can go from there and find you.
Yeah.
But
And I'm always open to people emailing me with questions or thoughts, or I love to have little conversations. I'm one of
yeah.
those, I don't avoid my email. I love connecting with people.
Wonderful. Awesome. Well, Leslie, this has been so wonderful. I would love to keep talking, but we have to end it sometime. But before we say goodbye, is there any one last little message that you want to leave with the listeners?
What came to me is one of my favorite poets. One of my favorite poets is Mary Oliver. And there's a poem that she wrote that says, it starts out like, you do not have to be good. You don't have to walk 100 miles through the desert on your knees repenting, something like that. And then it goes on and she says, all you have to do is let the soft animal of your body love what it loves.
Goosebumps again.
She's a beautiful poet.
Yeah.
But yeah, that speaks to me like so deeply. All you have to do is let the soft animal of your body love what it loves.
Well, Leslie, thank you so much for joining me today. And yeah, I hope I will talk to you very soon.
Great. Thank you so much, Kim. It's a
You're
pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Midlife with Courage podcast. If you liked what you heard, I would love it if you would leave a review. Even better, send a link of this episode to a friend. Until next time, take care of your beautiful self.